Okay, we'll have a couple very short announcements and then get started with all the technical stuff. Ben?
Hi, I'm Ben. Some of you know me, some of you don't. I'm one of the TAs. I'm the one who does all the homework, the administration stuff. I need to let you guys know my office hours this morning are not going to be in my office until 5:19. I'm moving them to Glen at 3 a.m. to the service lab. Also, my office hours this afternoon are going to have to cancel for unfortunate reasons. Nothing major, but I got to cancel. If that causes a problem for anyone, feel free to email me. I can work something out. I'll just let me know. Thanks.
Okay. Last homework assignment of the semester. Isn't that a good feeling? And don't forget, Friday, the last quiz of the semester. Very good feeling. Now, just as a reminder, I take the top 10 to compute your final grade. So, top 10 labs, top 10 homeworks, and top 10 quizzes. We'll be putting the final exam from last year with solutions online shortly so that you can start studying. And there was a very important email yesterday, which was that on the syllabus, it had a different date for the final exam in two different positions. Okay? The correct date for the final exam is May 3rd, 8:30 a.m. in here. So that's the Tuesday. We will probably have a final exam review marathon on Sunday. And we'll talk more about that as we get closer to it. Okay? But it's not too early to start thinking about studying for the final. And Ben, one last?
All the homeworks up for homework 10 are posted. Check your Blackboard grades. If you have any corrections, if anything's not posted, anything like that, let me know by next Friday so that we can fix them. The drop dead, everything is going to be considered final up through homework 10 next Friday. After that, homework 10 is final. I'm going to be posting homework 11 by the end of this week, and we'll hopefully get it as soon as possible. So, thanks.
Okay, so pay close attention to the Blackboard grades. We have discovered that occasionally Blackboard will remove a grade. That's why we're stressing so much, emphasizing looking at it. If you see a blank horizontal line for a grade, that means Blackboard has nothing there. If you previously had a grade, let us know. Okay? And if there is a zero, that means that we actually deliberately entered a zero. Now, one last thing. For the people that took the makeup quiz last Friday, okay, take a look at your grades online. I have one without a name. I think I know who it is, and I've sent them email, but take a look. If you took the makeup quiz and you have a horizontal bar, come see me, because I probably have your quiz. All the others have been entered. Okay? Now, let's get this. And let's start talking about a whole new area. Okay, we're starting a whole new topic today. This will be the last topic of the semester. It's going to be called transience. This is back in chapter 7, okay? What we did, and I want to remind you about this a little bit, is we did sinusoidal steady state for the last 2 weeks. What I've found is that when you're faced with a circuit and the characteristic of both a sinusoidal steady state, a phasor circuit, and a switched or transient circuit is that you have a capacitor and an inductor in it. Okay? And the question is, how can you tell which kind of problem it is? Well, you might have a circuit sort of like this. B because both of these types of circuits start with some basic similarity. Okay? And I'm going to do one here with a capacitor in it. Okay? That looks like what I've done for the last 2 weeks. Okay? And we could write a differential equation for it. And basically, we'd do Kirchhoff's voltage law and go around the circuit. And we'd write that differential equation, and we'd get this. What I'm going to do is remind you what we did with sinusoids and phasors, and what's going to be different. Okay? So both of these have the same starting point. And the big difference is going to be that term right there, the V of T on the right-hand side, the forcing function. Because what we did previously was we said that the circuit's going to be driven by a sine wave generator. You know, this could be a signal generator in the laboratory. It could be a communication circuit. It could be all kinds of stuff. The key point is, for phasors or sinusoidal steady state, our forcing function was something like a sine wave. We put in a sine wave, we got a sine wave out. Now we're going to do something a little bit different, okay? And we're going to change that forcing function, but let me make a comment right here. All of the variables on the left-hand side of that equation are V. V is called the state variable. Why is it called the state variable? It's called the state variable because it determines the stored energy in the system. Because it's 1/2 C, CV squared. And by the way, I stress this because in last year's final, I asked a question, what was the state variable in a circuit? And very few people seem to know what it was. The state variable is what reflects the energy. Now, I can do, and I want to remind you of this, I can do the same thing with an inductive circuit. The only difference with an inductive circuit is it's going to be in parallel. Because what I'm going to have is a Norton equivalent circuit. There's my Norton equivalent circuit. And I'm going to hook that up to an inductor. Okay? Other than that, these are basically the same circuit. Now, we just don't normally do as many inductive circuits. That will change a lot with the transient problems. We'll do a lot more. Okay? And it turns out we're going to get an equation because what we would do, and let's remind ourselves, with this circuit, because it's in a loop, we would always use Kirchhoff's voltage law and we'd sum voltages. Here, we'd have two loops. Instead, what we do, especially because we have a current source, that should be the first thing. Just a reminder. As soon as you see a current source, you do Kirchhoff's current law. And if you would sum up the three currents at that node right there and write the differential equation, and there's an I there, just like above, what we would get is L over Rn, dI of t, dt, plus I of t equals I n of t. Okay? Same thing, except I of t is the state variable. And the energy in the system, stored energy, is Zuntite. Is 1/2 Li squared. So you can see the comparison between the two. I can write similar equations. Right now, this is in general. This is sinusoidal steady state. This can be transient. Okay? What's going to start to make things different? Okay? That's going to be that forcing function. And I want to say something about that. Okay? And we're going to come back to these from time to time. What's the solution depend on? Okay? Now, what do you have in both of these circuits? What you have in both of these circuits is you have components, R's and L's. You have an input, okay? And that's exactly what we're going to have. Probably the number one thing that the solution depends on is the input. For sinusoidal steady state, we're going to see that A cosine omega t. For transients, transients are going to look more mysterious, okay? The first kind of input that you can expect to see is a switch. Now, how can that be an input? What's going to happen is we'll have a battery connected to a switch and it'll turn it on and off. We might have a signal generator connected to a switch. It might turn it on and off. So there's a couple subsets here. You might see a switch. Okay, the idea is turning something on and off. We'll see mathematically what that means in a minute. Second thing is we might see U of t. Remember when we talked about generalized functions? Remember the unit step. What is the unit step? The unit step is a function that goes like that between 0 and 1. All that is a mathematical equivalent of an on-off switch. Okay? So it's really the same thing. But that one's expressed mathematically, whereas if you see a switch, a symbol for a switch, you can be pretty sure it's a transient. And then there's actually probably the most confusing of all. Nothing. There is no input to the circuit. It's zero. Now, if you stop and think for a minute, how can you have an output when there's no input? Exactly. You've got an inductor, you've got a capacitor. At some time in the past, you put energy in. And that energy is let out of the circuit and converted into heat by resistors. So that's the one we're going to start with. It's going to be called the zero input response. Okay, but let's finish right here. The input really determines what's going to happen. Because those are the last two major subjects of this course. The second thing is circuit values. The Zuntite. Okay, and the RT and C, or the RN and L. Okay, the the circuit values are going to determine something, and certainly the way the circuit's connected. But let me back up here and remind you about these circuit values. This is a really big thing. You notice that I put the little sub T, I put the little sub N. That's a Thevenin equivalent, a Norton equivalent circuit. You may have wondered why we were doing those earlier in the semester and spending so much time on it. That can be 10 resistors, 3 sources, all kinds of junk. And what we've done is we reduce it. We find the Thevenin equivalent and put it in here. The key thing is the rest of the circuit can be simplified to one source, one resistor, across our inductor or our capacitor. So if I give you a really horrendous looking circuit, and by the way, we're going to give you a homework 13 on transients, but it's not to be turned in. It's just, here's the type of problems, and we'll give you a solution set for it. But the left-hand side of this can be really complicated, but we simplify it. And that's something that I'm not going to stress until we start, well, in probably a lecture or two when we start doing more complicated problems. This is the result of simplification in both cases. Okay? And now, what's going to be really big, and we ignored when we did sinusoidal steady state. And what was just mentioned as how can we have an output when we have nothing as an input? We've stored energy in the system. And this is really important because there are going to be some initial conditions. I might charge a capacitor up and put it in a circuit. Now, I'm not going to say that that's practical to do. Okay, you don't usually walk around with a charged capacitor, lay it down, and solder it in place. Okay, things don't quite work that way. You know, think about it in the lab. What it is it was probably charged up electronically and then left there. And then we're analyzing it later. Now, the same thing can happen with an inductor. You know, most of you are real familiar with the capacitors in the lab. We've used a lot of capacitors. Have we really used any inductors? No. You want to know why? They cost more. Okay, we run a cheap lab. Well, basically what it comes down to is we can make much, much better capacitors than we can make inductors. Okay. Capacitors, I talked to you about them before. You know, we take like a sheet of Mylar, aluminize one side, and roll it up. Actually, we'd coat some chemical jelly on it and roll it up. And that makes a great capacitor. And the polymer people and the materials people have gotten great at making really good capacitors. How do you make an inductor? You take a wire, and actually I can just wind it around this pen. That's a inductor. They're not as good because it turns out we have to put insulation on the wires. Insulation on the wires to keep them from shorting out actually degrades the inductor. But that's for another course. But we're going to be doing more with inductors now. Okay, now, that's the background. What we want to do is, and this is going to be really good for us, we want to find the solution to the previous two circuits for zero input. Okay, so I'm going to do the capacitive circuit. And you go back here in our circuit, remember RTC dBdt plus V equals dt. And what I mean is, we're making that go to zero. Mathematically, you might, yes. How'd I get this equation? Oh, you want me to do it? That was from doing Kirchhoff's voltage law around the, remember, I had a voltage source, and I had the resistor, and I had a capacitor. Okay? And what I did was, I just did Kirchhoff's voltage law going around, and I had, that's where I picked up the minus VT, then plus I times R, okay, plus V, which would be the voltage across the capacitor, and then I substituted in I equals CV dt for the I in the I times R. Now, did I do that too fast, or do you want me to write it down? Okay, does that make sense, though? Okay. This we've done before, so I really wasn't repeating it. Or I didn't plan on repeating it. But yeah, basically all I did was right here. Minus VTT plus IRT plus V equals zero. And then I recognized that I equals C dV dt and substituted that in. And that's how I got the equation, because I get then minus VT plus RTC dV dt plus V equals zero. Okay? Yeah, I didn't do it since we had done it a couple times before. Okay. So back to, we have no input. The assumption is that we charge the capacitor up somehow. You know, you hooked it up to a voltage source or did something. So what do you have? That's the solution to this particular equation that is called the homogeneous solution, the transient solution, okay, the natural solution. It turns out, though, and here's the really good thing, unlike a lot of other engineering disciplines, EEs don't like to deal with differential equations. So we try to limit our exposure to them. You noticed with sinusoidal steady state, we got rid of everything and replaced it by phasors. When we come to a real transient problem, we're going to assume a solution. And it will always be the same form. Okay? And it's basically going to be, using our Book's notation, that will always be the solution. Technically, what you're doing, if you're really into this, I said, back when we started this whole thing, this is called the method of undetermined coefficients. Because all we're going to do is always take the same solution, substitute it in, and find out what the coefficients are, and we'll get the coefficients from two sources. The components in the circuit, and the initial conditions. Okay, so I'll write this here because it sounds impressive. I'll never ask you a question about it. Okay, but that will always be the solution. And what we want to do is prove that it actually works. And that's not hard to do. Okay? Because what we can do is just substitute it in and see what happens. Okay? So, RTC DDT. So we take the derivative of the KE to the ST. What's going to happen? When you take the derivative of an exponential, all you get is the coefficient in the exponent times the original function. So if I take the derivative of KE to the ST, and maybe I'll put that up here, ddt of KE to the ST is SKE to the ST. So I substitute that in here. The V term is real easy. Nothing happens there. It's just plus KE to the ST, and that's equal to zero. Okay. So what's going on? Well, you've got a common factor, KE to the ST, and we have left RTC S plus 1 equals zero. For that thing to be equal to zero, what we have to do is require that this be zero. Because if I made the KE to the ST zero, my solution would be zero, and that would be the obvious trivial solution. So we require that to be zero, and it tells us right away, RTC S plus 1 equals zero, or S equals minus 1 over RTC. Okay? And this, and by the way, if you remember, this looks an awful lot like the cutoff frequencies that we were getting. I mean, we just did a whole bunch of omega C's, and they came out to be things like 1 over RTC. Okay, this, just, and by this I mean just the denominator, is known as the time constant. That'll be apparent as soon as we substitute it back in, because we have a KE, our solution is V of T equals KE to the ST. And so we have KE to the minus T over RTC. And I think you can see now maybe why it might be called the time constant. The first thing is, when we introduced the exponential function back in chapter 5, the denominator was called the time constant. The second thing is, and this is really obvious now, take a look. The numerator is time. That means the denominator has to be time. Okay? Because the exponent should be dimensionless. So this has units of time. And as a result, it's called the time constant of the circuit. Okay? So that's the solution. Now, if I did exactly the same thing for a, well, inductive circuit, because there's basically only two types of circuits we're going to do. These two. So we just did this one. If we did this one, set the input equal to zero, we'd come up with exactly the same thing, except it would be inductive. And we'd have I of t equals k, e, and now the time constant is different. Okay? What happens is, if you do it the way we just did it, it comes out to be minus rn over l times t. That's, if you take a look, that's not quite in the same form as the upper one. It's a little bit different because I have something multiplying by t. There is a time constant here, but you've got to watch how you define it. What you really want to do is write it ke to the minus t divided by l over rn. And you see now it's obvious. T is time, L over Rn is time. Okay? So you've got that dimensionless exponent. And this is called the time constant. Okay? And what lots of people do in solving these problems is since we've solved it once, they never solve it again. They just compute the time constant and plug it into the solution. Now, the k's are going to have to be solved from the initial conditions. Okay, and that's what we want to take a look at. Okay, we're going to do some examples, because this has been mathematical. Okay, what does this look like when it's applied in a real problem? What's a circuit look like? Okay, and this is a simple example out of your book, and it shows how you do that Thevenin-ization. Okay? Now, it's drawn a little bit differently. And in fact, part of our job is to translate this into a differential equation. Because, unfortunately, circuits are described by differential equations. If we want to analyze these, we have to be able to analyze the differential equation. So we've got a capacitor. It will have a value of 0.5 microfarads. Okay. And it's going to have an initial charge on it. VC at T equals 0 equals 30 volts. So we charged it up. Okay. Now there are many ways to charge it up. We could have just hooked it up to a battery and hauled it around. Okay. And then put it in our circuit. We won't worry about how it's done. Okay. Now we're going to have some resistors in it. This is a, well, there's no signal generator here, but we do have a switch. And so how does this get translated into that differential equation? Okay, now what we want to do is redraw it slightly. We are going to draw the switch, but I'm basically going to assume that it's closed. And I didn't say it up above, but this closes at T equals 0. So at T equals 0, that forms a good electrical connection. And here's where Thevenin-ization becomes so important. Here's where simplifying circuits becomes so important. There is absolutely no reason to keep three resistors on the right-hand side. Simplify it down to one resistor. If there were a source, it would have been over here. Okay, if we had put in an explicit battery or something, or a current source over here, Thevenize everything other than the capacitor. What you want to do is you always want to see the rest of the circuit from the viewpoint of the capacitor or the inductor. So just imagine, you're that capacitor there, you look out at the rest of the circuit, you want to see a Thevenin or Norton. And as soon as you come up with that Thevenin or Norton, solving the rest of the problem is pretty simple. So this would be a Thevenin, and if you want, what we're really going to do is, there's a 10K, 20K, 20K, and I want to know what's RT looking into that. Now there's no source, so there's no VT. Okay, now how would you do the Thevenization of that? Yes. Two parallel resistors, a series resistor. Yeah. So, what do you do with these? That's 20K in parallel with 20K. The equivalent of that is 20 times 20 over 20 plus 20, or 10K, And so you'd have that. We still want to know what the RT is. And that's just two resistors in series. So what do? You combine them. And now we have RT. There's no VT, but that's okay because there's no voltage source. Okay? So this right here just becomes this value. Okay? Now, we're going to talk about the voltage across the capacitor. What I want to do here is, and this sometimes you have to watch out for in these problems, I'm going to pick the current according to the passive sign convention. I'm going to have the current going into the capacitor. Okay? And to make everything consistent, I'm going to have the current going through the resistor in the same direction. Okay? Now, it might seem a little odd because we always draw our currents, it seems, going clockwise. Here, I want to follow the passive sign convention. That's always important because I can't talk about energy correctly unless I follow it. Okay? And I may have problems writing my equations. Okay? So what are we going to have now? And here's what we do for T greater than or equal to zero. That's the first assumption. It's switched. Okay? A turn circuit on. Okay? And that means, basically, that switch went away. I'm going to do Kirchhoff's voltage law and sum up my voltages around that circuit. Now, since my current is coming in, or rather coming out from the top, that's going to mean that my voltages across the resistor are plus at the bottom, minus at the top. Okay? So what are we going to have? Minus VC of T. Okay, minus I of T, R of T, equals zero. It's not too hard to write the equation once you get it reduced to that resistance in parallel. Okay, now what we do is we remember our terminal characteristics. Okay, the so-called constraint equation. I of T is going to be equal to the current now through the capacitor. And what's the current through the capacitor? CdV dt. Okay? It's C times dV C dt. This is always important. What I have noticed is on quizzes, exams, what you'll do is you can write that upper equation, and you can't quite think about, well, I've got to eliminate V, or I've got to get rid of I. The whole idea is you can only solve a differential equation in one variable. Okay? So you have to use the constraint equation. And on the formula sheet that you have, you're always given I equals C dV dt, or for an inductive circuit, V equals L di dt. You want to plug that in and get it down to one variable. So minus VC, minus, and notice, there's a C and an RT, and I'll just multiply them together, dVC dt, technically of T, equals zero. And that's exactly the equation that we had before, that I told you that you'd always come up with. Okay. Differential equation. Okay, and we don't usually write it with a minus sign, so let's get rid of that. And put it the way we always do. And now, what do we always know about that? I claim earlier, the KE to the ST solution always works. That's all you have to remember. We don't, by the way, put the KE to the ST on the formula sheet. That one we think you can remember. Okay? But assume that's the fundamental thing now. Claim is that it works. Okay? And after you do a couple of these, you won't do them so formally like I did here. Okay? You'll just write down the answer and start plugging in the coefficients. But I'm doing it slow because I think the fundamental way of doing it through the differential equation, you can never go wrong. No matter how confusing the problem may be. Okay? So, substitute VC of t into the differential equation, and what do we get? RTC, the derivative of that is S, KE to the ST, plus KE to the ST, equals zero, and we have the same solution we just talked about. It'll be RTCS plus 1 equals 0. We want this term to be 0. So RTCS plus 1 equals 0. S equals minus 1 over RTC. And we have numbers in this problem now. Okay, we go back. And it was minus 1 over RT is 20K. And I always keep reminding you, put in your numbers with all the exponents, because what will happen is you may easily, under pressure, forget a micro, a milli, a kilo, or something. Okay? Your capacitor was 0.5 or times 10 to the minus 6. Okay? And you can multiply that out. And I think I did. Oh, and it comes out to be minus 100. Very conveniently chosen numbers. Okay, so what's that mean? VC of t equals KE to the minus 100T. Now, this would be a great question to ask you. What's the time constant? Really, really close. Forget the negative. If you just say 1 over 100, because we don't usually have negative time, okay? But yeah, 1 over 100. So many of you would say 100, though, is the time constant. And that's not units of time. It's inverse time. So 1 100th is the time constant. Okay, but you were really on top of it. But it's amazing. If we did have a quiz on this, and I gave you that as a question, I bet 30% of you would miss that. So it's new material. Got to be careful. What is meant by time constant? And here in this problem, we're given some initial conditions. We're given that VC at t equals zero equals 30 volts. So what do? We just set these equal. 30 equals KE to the minus, and this is at t equals 0. So it's e to the minus 0. Or 1. So we just have K. And so right away, K equals 30. So the whole solution is VC of t equals 30 e to the minus 100t. And what you'll see done a lot, because this is only for after the switch is closed, you'll see us write that. Or if you want to be elegant mathematically, Both of those are fine. The only thing that this is doing is reminding us that this is the solution only for after we close the switch. There's nothing happening before the switch closed. But that's a whole other story. Also, for those of you who are in M4 or remember M4, this would allow you to do Laplace transforms. There are other techniques to solve it. You know, we're using that one we called method of undetermined coefficients. In an advanced class, you'd use Laplace transforms. And in fact, this is a difference between us and other schools. Some other schools will put the circuits class after M4, and all of this is done with Laplace transforms. And I don't know if any of you noticed that there's two versions of our book. There's a regular version, and there's a version called Laplace Early, in which all of this is done now by Laplace transforms. Now, how many of you would have liked us to do Laplace transforms instead of this simpler solution? Well, there's at least a couple. Meckies? Just checking. Meckies don't want to... Okay. Actually, I like the Laplace transform technique myself, but I think this is a good way to get started out in doing all of this. Okay. Oh, and let me point out now something that you can do, since we're probably not going to have time to start another problem. But let's suppose that I took this circuit, the one we just did, and I'm just going to add a couple other things to it, because this is similar to some of the homework problems in the book that I'll recommend for you to study. Okay. We computed and came up with VC of T. Oh, sorry. Okay. Sorry. All I did was redraw the circuit. Now, suppose I asked you for I of T. Or suppose I might have asked you for I1 of T. This is quite common now in a problem. We solved for V. What you want to do is take that solution and use it to compute everything else. So, for example, I of T is the capacitive current, which is C dV dt, and that's V sub C. So we'd just substitute in 0.5 times 10 to the minus 6. That's our capacitor value. And we'd put in now the derivative of 30 e to the minus 100 t. Okay? And so that would give us I of t. And we'd have 0.5 times 10 to the minus 6. We'd end up with a 30. We'd get a minus 100. We'd have an e to the minus 100 t. Okay? And some of you might immediately say, whoa, what's going on here? We got a minus sign in the answer. What's the minus sign? The minus sign actually makes perfect sense if you stop and think for a moment. The minus sign says what? The current's coming out of the capacitor. What's the only source of energy in the circuit? The capacitor. So doesn't it make sense that the capacitor would discharge? And that's all the minus is telling us. Energy's coming out of the capacitor. We followed the passive sign convention. We could multiply voltage by current, get negative energy or negative power, telling us that it's supplying power. And I think that we've got all of 20 seconds, but what you could do is I1 of t, apply a current divider. It'd be the opposite resistance over the sum of the resistances. And what's the resistance, or what's the current going through? That'd be times I of t. We can talk more about that next time, but once you have a formula for a voltage or current, you can find voltages and currents everywhere else in the circuit. Next time, I think maybe we'll do an automotive ignition system. Wow, three TAs. What?
You came late.
Well, yeah, I noticed.